Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai once again on the line with Sarah Olivieri. I'm very happy to be talking to Sarah again. This time we're going to get into the special SBA stuff that's happening right now and talk about how nonprofits might or might not to choose to take advantage of what's available to them at the moment. Sarah, how are you doing?
I am quite well. This pandemic has had me extra busy, but I've been very fortunate, even though I'm in New York State, where we have had plenty of COVID. It is definitely real, but nothing has touched my family or friends or local or my immediate community. So I'm very fortunate in that way.
Very happy to hear that. My wife had some symptoms, and we're not sure if it was COVID or not. They just monitored her and told her to stay clear of folks until she was asymptomatic for 10 days, which is exactly what she did. And and so now she's thinking of getting that serological test to figure out if what she had was actually COVID or not.
I think it can bring great peace of mind for those, especially grown-ups who thought they might be sick, to know mm-hmm. whether or not they were.
Exactly. And I hope we get answers soon in terms of, do the antibodies actually help you from, you know, can you be reinfected? Because I think the assumption is that once you've got it, you're not going to get it again. And I'm hearing things that say that may not entirely be true.
Right. They don't know how much. My son actually had some symptoms really early on. They weren't even really testing anybody yet, but it's unusual for him to be sick. But he's 7, so I'm not going to get a blood draw for him because it doesn't really tell us that much about what he can and can't do. And basically, he's going to stay quarantined regardless.
Right.
So, but if they actually knew that he would not be able to pass it on to anybody else, it might be worth going through that with a 7-year-old.
Wow. Well, let's shift gears and turn back towards the SBA issue.
Yeah. So I'm not an expert in the SBA loans, but what I'm hoping to help people think through is some tools, some questions that they can ask to decide whether or not accepting a loan makes sense for them. Because that's what I hear people asking, like, I got approved, but should I take the money? Or it makes them really nervous to borrow money. And I thought it might be helpful to just kind of talk through, how do you figure that out for yourself if you're a nonprofit?
Yeah. I mean, I know nonprofits that wrestle with that even when times are good. I can't imagine the internal conversations they must be having now that times are not so good. So how do you do that? How do you help a nonprofit suss that out?
Well, one approach to just think about really generally is, does it ever make sense to borrow money and under what conditions? And I was reminded actually just this weekend, I was listening to a business book and heard a saying that I'd heard before for for-profit business, and it's equally true for nonprofits, is that you should borrow when you don't need it. Because it's good to have cash available when you do need it. And usually when you do need cash, often you're in a tight situation and people don't want to approve a loan. So in this case, though, you're going to get approved because, you know, they've got a good reason to give everybody money, even though you're in a tight situation. So it's not harmful to borrow money if you don't have plans to spend it immediately. And I do know with these loans from the SBA, especially with the EIDL loan, which is, you know, more than just paychecks, you get approved for a certain amount, and then you essentially have a line of credit in essence. So you don't have to borrow the full amount, and you don't have to borrow the full amount now, but I think you certainly should accept it at the very least. That's point one. Point two is the interest rate for the EIDL loans for nonprofits is probably less than inflation. It's in less than inflation normally is, and inflation's probably going to be higher this year. So if you just take that money and you put it in the bank, it's worth more now to you. And the cost of the loan, if it's less than inflation, it's like not having to pay interest on it at all, practically.
It seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah, borrow the money. And you could probably borrow the money, put it in a savings account or some really conservative investment and make money on it and then return the lump sum if you needed to and you made out better. That's how low the interest rate is. So we can get in some more, you know, fine-tuned thinking about whether or not you should borrow. But I think that in some ways, this is a no-brainer. You should borrow the money.
Right, right. I'm hearing this, but I can't help that on the one hand, we're talking about these loans as being, you know, purely a business endeavor. And yet the conversation we've just had for the last 5 minutes didn't have much to do with mission objectives or keeping the company afloat or, you know, looking at what I imagine some nonprofits are having to wrestle with right now, which is some pretty dire circumstances.
Yeah. I mean, in all likelihood, if you're borrowing the money, you're going to need to spend some of the money. So maybe we should talk about where you should spend this kind of money and where you should not spend this kind of money.
Yeah, definitely.
So probably the biggest mistake I saw nonprofits making, and they started doing it right away, is they started laying off their fundraising team. And that's like the opposite of what you should be doing, I think. So if you're borrowing money that you are, so let's break the money into two categories. The money that you don't have to pay back, because you should just take that because you're going to take it, you're going to spend it on things like payroll and rent, you know, definitely follow the guidelines, but you're not going to have to pay it back. Mm-hmm. So let's just think now about the portion of the money you're going to borrow, but you will have to pay back. The interest rate will be low, so we're not concerned about the cost of borrowing, but that you do have to pay it back. So if, because that is a reality and the terms are very generous, plan to invest that money in income generating expenses. And this is a term I want all nonprofits to get used to saying to themselves. All your expenses are not flushing money down the toilet. You should divide them into two categories, or actually three categories. Income generating expenses, things that you spend money on that cause you to bring money in, like fundraising, and then mission generating or impact generating expenses, things you spend money on that get you a return on your mission. And some things you'll spend money on will bring you money and impact. And then there are very few things, and when I work with clients on budgets, we actually put little icons in the budgets. I like to put a toilet bowl icon because so many nonprofits, I think of spending all money as flushing it down the toilet. But there's only a teeny bit of your money that's in the flushing it down the toilet category, which are things that you have to spend money on that basically bring you no return in impact or money. And those are things like, you know, payroll taxes you owe to the IRS, liability insurance that you're required to have. Certainly, you could argue it reduces your risk a bit, but things like that you may think of as flushing down the toilet. But the rest of your money should either be income generating expenses, mission generating expenses, or they should do a bit of both.
I like the distinction. I especially like the distinction impact generating expenses. I think that's brilliant.
Thank you. So if you want to divide up your budget, put a little heart icon by your line items that are impact generating and a little money icon next to the expense items that are money generating. And then you can put a toilet bowl icon next to the ones that are just flushing it down the toilet. So what you want to do with your loan is spend your money now. And even if you're not borrowing, let's say you're borrowing from yourself, right? It's basically the same thing. If you have money in reserves and you're thinking, should we spend our reserves? The decision is kind of the same, except don't spend from your reserves and not take the loan. Take the loan first. And then if you still have to spend from your reserves, spend from your reserves. But either way, the decision process is the same. Spend money, even spend more money than you were planning to on your income generating expenses. And if you need to cut costs right now because you're struggling, and I know this is not what nonprofit people like to hear, but you may need to cut your impact generating expenses temporarily right now till we make it through the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. That makes a ton of sense. Yep.
Yeah. So if you spend your money on activities that are bringing more money back in, you will be able to pay the loan back and have money left over to continue the rest of your impact generating activities.
So in a nutshell, if you don't have to take the, if you don't have to pay the money back, you should definitely take it. And mm-hmm. if even if you do have to pay the money back, it may make sense for you to take it, even if all you do is hang on to it.
Yep.
And then if you should need that money to keep the organization afloat, take a look at the sheet, figure out what's an income generating expense versus an impact generating expense versus the flushable expenses, and
exactly. And
put the money towards the income generating expenses first.
Yeah. And if you go to pivotground.com/budget-template, we'll double check that for the show notes. You can download my budget template for free with little instructions on how to use it. And it has the icons in it already.
Thank you, Sarah. If you're a complete newbie like me, where would I even go to get a hold of these small business loans? Am I going to my bank? Am I going to am I going to a federal office of some sort?
Yeah, that is such a great question. It really drives me nuts when the very, very basic first steps of things are not talked about. So thank you for asking that. So if you want the EIDL loan, which stands for Economic Injury Disaster Loan, meaning you're suffering because the economy crashed, you're going to go to the SBA website. Is it SBA.gov? I'm blanking on it right now, but if you just Google SBA, Small Business Association.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And look for the EIDL and you can apply. Although I think they stopped accepting applications because they ran out of money to give. And so when the second wave of money came out, it was just to fulfill what you already did. So if you didn't do the EIDL, what I want you to remember is when opportunities like that come out, apply immediately.
Yeah.
Do not wonder whether or not you should. You can decide after you've been approved, but always jump on opportunities like that. And if you don't have enough wiggle room in your day-to-day to jump on an opportunity, then you need to rework how you're running your organization so at least some people have the bandwidth to take advantage of an opportunity. But let's say you applied for the EIDL already, you probably should be in some status of receiving the advance, which they originally said was going to be $10,000 for everybody who applied. And then when they realized they weren't going to have enough money, they quickly changed their policy and said it was actually going to be $1,000 per employee. And you probably, if you've received that, you may have gotten a direct deposit. And then around now, and I applied for the EIDL, I got mine very quickly actually, and I'm now at the phase where I'm told to complete my application. Now, if you were really, really early on the process, I actually had to apply twice because I was so early applying, I was in the old system of filling out the complete forms. So some of you might have filled out all the forms you needed to originally, but when they changed the process to having, it was actually after the SBA found that their site had been hacked, they started changing their online form. And they were asking you for a minimal amount of information. And now to get the rest of your loan, they're asking you for the rest of the information that they need from you in order to determine how much total you qualify for.
I see.
So that's the EIDL. Did we miss anything in there?
I I'm the last person who should be able to answer that question.
So the other loan is a little different process. It's the paycheck loan, the PPP, which I'm always tempted to say, PPE, which is personal protective equipment. But the one that's designed specifically for paying your employees, and actually a few other expenses are covered. But that's the idea behind it was, even if you can't afford to pay your employees, you can get this loan to keep paying them.
Right.
And the PPP is, provided you spend it as it's intended, it's 100%, you don't have to pay it back. Whereas the EIDL is only the advance amount that you don't have to pay back.
I see.
But the PPP you actually apply for through a bank. So you get the form from your bank, but the SBA kind of made a unified form, but you apply through your bank, and then the bank gives you the money and the SBA gives your bank the money. So that's how that process works. And I have heard a little bit of kind of story around how it's working for different people. Some is helpful, some is quite unfortunate. I'd be happy to kind of share a little of that if you think people would be interested.
Yes, I think people would be interested. I think that that's something we need to be talking about.
So one of the things is, if you already had a relationship with your bank, if you have an account there, if you've borrowed from them before, you're likely to get processed faster, partly because they have a relationship with you. But one of the things that was kind of a flaw in the policy was, one of the things that apparently they made forgivable was you were allowed to use your loan to pay interest on loans that you already had taken out. And this incentivized banks to process faster and approve more readily the loans that people applied for where they already had an outstanding loan with that bank, which is really not, was not the intent, obviously, for you receiving the loan. But there's an example, you know, and I think this one's interesting because I often in nonprofits, I run across this fear of, over fear of conflict of interest. And they think, oh, everything's going to be a conflict of interest if there's money involved. And usually, like, I rarely see a board member with a true conflict of interest, let's say. But here's an example of a true conflict of interest. I get to decide whether or not you get to borrow this money. But if you already owe me money, you can use the money that I approve for you to pay me back. So of course I'm going to approve the loans of people who already owe me money before I approve the loans of people who don't owe me any money at all.
It seems sort of counterintuitive, but I get it.
Yeah. So that's one thing that happened. And then the other thing is, right, you need to make the case in your application for how much money you really need. And, you know, depending on how you did your books and what you count or what you don't count or whether or not you take the time to really consider the various forms, right, of how you count it, right? There's a few ways you could count, you know, how many employees do you have? Well, you know, are you looking at how many employees did you have in the last 12 months? Are you looking at how many employees you had in the last 3 months? Are you looking at how many employees you had these 3 months a year ago? Right? Depending on the time period you looked at, the amount would change. And there are a couple options for how you're allowed to show that in your application. So if, and there is still time, I think, to apply for the paycheck loan, but you want to make sure that you maximize what you can get by thinking about, you know, what is the time frame for calculating how much I've spent in the past, and you know what's the best one for me for my organization.
Right, right. Oh, gosh, there's always a lot to think about, and there's always a lot more to talk about. If anyone had questions for you, Sarah, how would you suggest they contact you?
You're welcome. If you go to pivotground.com, you'll see an apply for a call button, and you are welcome to find a spot on my calendar and talk with me one-on-one. Or you can find me on Facebook or LinkedIn. But through the website, it's a great way if you want to have a conversation with me.
Awesome. Thank you. Any last parting words of advice on the topic for our listeners?
Just that, you know, money if you don't have to be scared of it. Numbers are fantastic because you can just kind of add them up and they'll come out with a definitive answer. And if you're nervous about money, I encourage you to download my budget template, and you can look for some of the trainings I've done. If you download the template, I'll send you some links on some trainings I've done, because I find most people, if you just take a little different approach to how you think about money, everybody in your organization can understand how the money works. And when everybody does, your ability to leverage that money and turn it into more money and more impact is really incredible. So, you know, I know it can be scary for people, but be brave and go forth and use your money.
I love it. Thank you. And I'm very glad to hear that you and your family are doing well. Hope your son is feeling better.
Thank you. Yes, he recovered. And, you know, it's been quite a time, months at home, yep. Playing online games. It's a whole new world for the little ones.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I keep thinking to myself, boy, it would be great to be an 11-year-old at home with the PlayStation 4 right now.
Yeah, you know, my son is 7. I never thought he would be playing online games at this age, but it became the only way for him to have social interaction. I'm like, learn how to play Minecraft online versus, you know, don't spend too much on screen time. Like, well, social interaction trumps however you get it. People need to interact with each other.
Yeah, I completely and totally agree.
Yeah, but it gets me thinking about the future. How will this 7-year-old be different when he's using virtual social experiences from such a young age? Because I know we're not taking it away. Right. Once it's like you opened Pandora's box, so now what?
Right. Well, in my case, I'm looking forward to getting to the other side of this and to substitute all my virtual connections here with real life, you know, face-to-face time. I'm very much looking forward to those days. Sarah, as always, thank you for taking the time to make this recording with me. I thought this was an excellent conversation and I can't wait to share it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And to our listeners, thank you as always for joining us. We really appreciate your time, and we hope you find this content useful. If you have suggestions for other conversations we should be having on the Nonprofit Snapcast, please go to nonprofitsnapcast.org and drop me a line with your suggestions there. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, I hope you and yours are safe. We'll see you with another episode in a few days.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.